now up to 42 of them watching from home, in addition to everyone gathered here. But we are honored to welcome you back to TBS and to have you speak with us tonight. We welcome Yolanda Savage-Narro.
Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction, and Shabbat Shalom. And I like to say Shabbat Shalom, y'all. I'm from Mississippi. And I, every time I have an opportunity to say it, I'd love to say it. So I'm Yolanda Savage Narva. I use she, her pronouns. And we are currently sitting on the unceded tribal land of the Manhoap tribal indigenous people. Before I start, I want to thank Sue and Frank Kahn for Shabbat dinner. It was amazing. Rabbi Witzer, thank you so much for having me tonight. And thank you to each and every one of you for being here on this rainy night in Virginia. First of all, what a beautiful sanctuary. It is absolutely beautiful. And what a really beautiful way to celebrate Shabbat and be with you just a few days from the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. A few years ago, when I started working at the Religious Action Center and the Union for Reform Judaism, Temple B'nai Shalom was one of the first congregations I had the honor to speak to over Zoom, of course, because we were in the heart of the pandemic. And, you know, it made me start thinking back to 2020 and 2021, and that was only a few years ago. As I was preparing my remarks for tonight with all of you here, my memory went back, and I thought about how different that year was for me, and I think for everyone else. We were living with so much uncertainty and fear, and in some instances, hopelessness and sadness. There was not only loss of life, but loss of life as we knew it, how we lived, how we did our daily activities. And all of this had been created by nature, by a natural disaster. The COVID-19 virus had just the right ingredients, but not only just the right ingredients, but the right amount of those ingredients. And not just the right amount of those ingredients, but it also had the perfect conditions to produce a global pandemic. So if we fast forward to today, in addition to the natural disasters that continue to plague us all, we are also dealing with man-made disasters that have huge global impacts and consequences. 2 years ago today, somewhere in that time frame, Russia invaded the Ukraine. On October 7th, Hamas launched a horrific, brutal attack on innocent civilians of Israel and other people who were in the country at that time. There's a humanitarian crisis in Sudan due to the civil war. The country of Haiti is being torn apart. The Uyghur people in China are displaced, and the crisis in Gaza can't be ignored. There is unrest on our own U.S. border with migrant workers, and unfortunately, I'm sure I have left something out. We are facing a rise in anti-Semitism and Jewish hate. Muslims are seeing a rise in Islamophobia. Racism is a constant and never goes away. And this year in 2024, we will be in an all-out combat for whether the United States of America will remain a democracy or creep closer to an authoritarian regime. I'm not here to bring doom and gloom. I am, for the most part, a person who sees the glass half full. But I do recognize that we are in for an uphill battle and a long one. And as human beings with emotions and experiences and expectations, how do we navigate all of this? How do we live in dynamic tension with the world around us and still hold our values close while we tackle these existential crises. We know that in response to events that are happening right now and prior to the events of October 7th, Jews and other groups are seeing a rise in hate. The Anti-Defamation League cited 2,031 anti-Semitic incidents between October 7th and December 7th. 1,400 of those were linked to the fighting in Israel and Gaza, and 400 of those occurred on college and university campuses. By comparison, there were 465 total incidents over the same time frame in 2022. The Council on American-Islamic Relations also reported an increase in Islamophobic incidents. Between October 7th and December 2nd, the CAIR recorded 2,100 reports of bias or requests for help, 172% more than the 2022 average. And while anti-Semitism and Islamophobia are on the rise, so are hate crimes based on race and sexual orientation. There were 6,557 reported incidents in 2022 related to race and racism. The LGBTQ plus community, specifically incidents targeting gay men, reached 1,075 people, while anti-lesbian incidents numbered 622. A significant increase of nearly 40% was observed in reporting anti-transgender incidents with a specific focus on Black transgender women. This is disturbing. And these are real people we are talking about. People who are being targeted and receiving hate messages and crimes just because of who they love, how they want to live in the world, their religious beliefs, their ethnicity, and their culture. This poem comes to mind when I think about all of this. Maya Angelou wrote a poem called I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. A free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wing in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with the fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze, and the trade wind soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on a dawn bright light, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams, his shadow shouts on a nightmare scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill where the caged bird sings of freedom. How do we live in dynamic tension when the world around us is falling apart and still hold our values when we're tackling these crises? Number one, we don't allow the system, the institution, structural oppression, and supremacy to divide us. We remain committed to understanding that our safety is in our solidarity. Our freedom and our liberation lies in our love for one another, compassion, and holy boldness. Number two, we marry social justice with equity. So right now, We are swimming in dynamic tension as we continue to do the work of social justice and also focus on what is happening in Israel, fighting anti-Semitism, and fighting for democracy for all people. For so long, it hasn't gone away, this need to fight for social justice and social action. While we know social action is focused on individuals, feeding people who are hungry, providing clothing to those who don't have access to clothing in the winter, clean underwear, basic necessities of human dignity, we know that this is something we have to do, our social action. Our social justice is also important, and it has been focused on a more global scale. How do we fight for the women's right to choose? How do we fight for voting rights? How do we fight for environmental justice? We must continue to do social justice work as well. We have to focus on these crises as they impact all of us equally. But when we begin to talk about focusing on equity, this is a place I've personally began to have interesting conversations. Barbara Smith, a Black lesbian feminist visionary, who was one of the founders of the Combahee River Collective. It's a place where Black women collectively came together to advocate on behalf of Black feminism, who felt left out of the greater feminism movement, wrote this statement. Until Black women are free, none of us will be free. We've been putting equality ahead of equity. And until we're able to focus our social justice efforts with an eye to equity, we will be here 50 years from now fighting the same fight. Which brings me to point number 3. I gotta talk about DEI. I'm sure that you've been hearing about DEI a lot, diversity, equity, and inclusion, in the news and in different places. Which brings me to point number 3. We must fight for DEI. We must fight to make sure that DEI does not end. Some definitions. Textbook definition of diversity really means a range of human experiences that makes us unique. It could be based on a number of different things: gender, race, socioeconomic status, whether or not we're parents, our age, whether or not we live with a disability, so many things. Diversity to me is this beautiful mosaic of dynamic tensions and symphonic melodies coming together. So if we end DEI, we end the beauty that we see in diversity. What is equity? A lot of people say, I'm not sure what the difference is between equity and equality. Well, equity is basically fairness and justice. When I'm asked to define the difference, I tell people to think about two buckets of water. One bucket is overflowing with water, and one bucket has a little water in it. And so the person who's coming by to fill the buckets says, you know what? This bucket is overflowing. So I gotta add more water to this bucket. That's equity. Instead of saying I'm going to give an equal amount to this bucket that's already overflowing and give another equal amount to this bucket that has very little in it. That's what equity is. If we end DEI, we are ending fairness and justice. Inclusion means that we are making space and embracing all people. That means we're moving past diversity. We've achieved equity. And now inclusion means you're all here and we want to hear your authentic voices. So if we end DEI, we end the opportunity to hear authentic voices. DEI is for all of us. And we've got to make sure everyone understands that. Anyone who is treated unfairly, unjust, discriminated against, or hated because of who they are, who they love, how they worship, their ethnicity, their color, the color of their skin, their culture, DEI is a home for you. And unfortunately, we do have people in our own community who want to fight to end DEI. The latest article by Barry Weiss says that DEI is not about diversity, equity, or inclusion. It is about arrogating power to a movement that threatens not just Jews, but America itself. Bill Ackman and Elon Musk recently called DEI racism. Governor DeSantis and Governor Abbott are constantly talking about the woke agenda, eliminating education about the Holocaust, enslavement, genocide of the indigenous people, and gender identity from books in schools. There are countless attempts to undo affirmative action. There are countless other examples of trying to push the moral arc of the universe in the opposite direction of justice. Susan Neiman, a Jewish woman who grew up in the South and has spent the majority of her life in Berlin, wrote a book called Learning from the Germans. In this fascinating book, Neiman contrasts the Germans' effort to address the atrocities of the Holocaust and the Nazi regime with the failure of the U.S. to simply address the impacts of enslavement, Jim Crow, racism, and what's happening today. I want to share an excerpt from her book. She says, "There is no one off shot for racism. For years, Germans have been discovering that undoing racist damage is a complex and multi-layered process. In arguing for learning from the Germans, I've also argued for learning from their mistakes. Most initial German attempts to work off the past were slow, reluctant, and incomplete. But they combined to create a historically new insight. You cannot have a healthy present if you bury the shame of the past. They also created a precedent. It is possible to change a nation's deepest self-image, to switch perspective from self-pitying to accountable perpetrator. We'd all prefer to see our people as unbendingly heroic, but when that becomes impossible, we incline to say that history made them victims. The fact that this turn was taken by post-war Germans and defenders of the lost cause shows how natural the movement is. What was not natural beforehand was the next turn the Germans took, away from the focus of their own wounds to acknowledge the wounds they caused others. Germany has become palpably freer, stronger, and easier since it chose to make that turn. We shouldn't expect the process of facing up to history to be easier for Americans and or Britons or anyone else. Like most hard things, it's a challenge that some will resist. What matters less is how we start. For we have indeed started that process, but how we proceed is important. Nothing provides better orientation and thinking than the words inscribed on the National Memorial to Peace and Justice in Alabama. And it says, for the hanged and the beaten, for the shot, drowned, and burned, for the tortured, tormented, and terrorized, for those abandoned by the rule of law, we will remember with hope, because hopelessness is the enemy of justice, with courage, because peace requires bravery, with persistence, because justice is a constant struggle, with faith, because we shall overcome. About a year and a half ago, the Union for Reform Judaism began a process of figuring out who we want to be moving forward. We were approaching our 150th anniversary that we celebrated at the end of December of 2023. I imagine maybe some of you were there. We embarked upon a strategic refresh about a year and a half ago. We worked with our North American board, our staff, leaders and congregations, both our lay and professional leaders, and even people not affiliated with the reform movement formally. And we rewrote our mission, vision, and created values. And I want to share those with you. The URJ's mission is grounded in our values. The Union for Reform Judaism creates, connects, and inspires diverse congregations, camps, and other Jewish communities to pursue our vision. Our vision is a world in which Judaism enables all people to experience peace and wholeness, justice and equity, and belonging and joy. And our values, there are six. First one is shared humanity. In the image of God, we see everyone is created in the divine image, and as such, treat everyone with respect, dignity, and kindness. Justice. Seek justice. We seek justice for all people throughout the world. Belonging. We build, connect, and enrich communities, congregations, camps, programs, social justice work, and more, where youth and adults of all identities from all generations and lived experiences feel a deep sense of belonging. Learning. We honor Torah, wrestle with Jewish traditions and beliefs, including God, and engage directly with the difficult questions of our age. And evolving. We awaken to new awareness, holding ourselves accountable for changing as we grow. The work that we have committed ourselves to do at the URJ more broadly, and through my portfolio of work more specifically, is what we're calling creating equitable communities of belonging. As we look forward to the next 150 years of Reform Judaism, we realize that now is the time that we have to act. If we are going to rewrite the narrative of what the next 150 years will look like, if we are going to take responsibility of becoming the ancestors we want to be, we have to put the work in now. In honor of King's birthday on Monday, I wanted to read a little piece of his letter that he wrote in the Birmingham jail. It's a very, very long letter, but this is just a piece of it. King said, "Moreover, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with the narrow, provincial, outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives inside the United States can never be considered an outsider." And to close, I want to leave you with something from Leviticus chapter 19, verses 17 through 18. We learn that all people are descendants from a single person, so that no person can say that my ancestor is greater than yours. God created humanity from the four corners of the earth, yellow clay and white sand, black loam and red soil. Therefore, the earth can declare to no part of humanity that it does not belong here, that this is not its rightful home. Thank you so much. Shabbat shalom. Mazels to your family.